Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
So it's day 5 here at Roland Garros. Welcome back to Tennis Unfiltered, the Roland Garros editions. Today it's just me. I had George with me yesterday. I'll have Calvin with me tomorrow, but it's just me, James Gray of inews.co.uk and the iNewspaper, checking in with your review of day 4. It was quite a late finish last night because Djokovic, well, came into press just before midnight, I seem to remember. I can't actually remember now. It was very late and I didn't finish till 1:30, so I apologise if this is not in your feeds as early as it might be. I would say it wasn't a dramatic day, but there were moments of drama in it. That's my impression of it. I spent the morning, first of all, watching Calvin coach, kind of. He won't appreciate me saying that, but Patton and Cash were in first round action against Max Purcell and Ben Shelton, the very exciting and huge serving young American. They're up a set and a break, but unfortunately that was when Shelton and Purcell really got fired up, to be honest. The Shelton serve started firing and they were unfortunately beaten in 3 sets. They've not, you know, I think they would admit, they've not had the kind of clay court swing like the grass court swing that they had last year. They will head to Surbiton now, where they've obviously got a fair few points to defend, so that'll be quite a big grass season for them, so best of luck. And then I headed eventually down to Suzanne Longlen for Kandori against Lucas Puy, which as a match, to be honest, was a little bit underwhelming, but that was as much because Norrie came out of the blocks incredibly well and played very well. I mean, he won the first set in 24 minutes. There was a bagel on the cards. He got as far as 5-love. And yeah, I mean, he played really, really well in that first half hour. A complete opposite to how he played against Benoit Paire when he was really scratchy in the early stages. It was just, I don't know. I mean, I asked him afterwards, like, what did you do differently? And he said, well, I don't know. He thought it was a bit slower because it was in the shade and that helped him, you know, when it... The quick conditions sometimes you can find it difficult to adjust to, and I know he certainly prefers the kind of slower, hot, high bouncing conditions that you find in America, for example, and in places where he's done well before, like Indian Wells and Los Cabos and things like that. So that was more suited, but I think also he just played better, he was just feeling a bit better. And you know, Pear is an awkward guy to play, and Puy is a bit more conventional. And he didn't play brilliantly, to be fair. The crowd tried to get into it. It was a really great atmosphere, but they didn't have a lot to shout about, so it was difficult for them to get into it too much, to be honest. There was a moment of controversy, as sort of seems to happen in every Cam Norrie match these days. It's quite remarkable, really. He lunged for a drop volley by Puy and appeared to get it, and lob it over Puy's head. Puy stopped because because he thought it bounced twice and then realised the umpire hadn't seen it or wasn't going to give it. So then he ran back and fired the ball long, and that brought up break point. And he had quite an extended argument with Ivaz Daraki Moore, the Greek umpire, who was obviously unmoving. And, you know, the replay showed it definitely did bounce twice. There's no question about that. Even Cam agreed afterwards. He said, yeah, I've just seen it on video. And it did bounce twice. I don't really know what that noise was. Probably on the TV guys setting up. Anyway, so Cam said, yes, it definitely did bounce twice. I now know. But he did say he didn't know at the time. He said, well, I wasn't sure. And, you know, that's probably fair enough. And I think most players would probably agree why it's up to the umpire to make the decision. Puy was pretty annoyed about it afterwards. Not with Norrie, but he said, you know, umpires are allowed to make mistakes, but if they make a mistake, what happens? And if we make a mistake, you know, we get fined $15,000 or whatever. So, yeah, it's kind of an understandable frustration, and this is something that players do keep saying. It's, you know, we want umpires to be accountable. But, I mean, I think probably, you know, if you introduce some sort of system where if the umpire gets, you know, falls under a certain percentage of correct decisions, then, you know, they get demoted or whatever. And I think actually what players would find is umpires get most decisions right. It's just that obviously the ones people remember are the ones they get wrong. It does kind of make a mockery of the fact that they don't use video replay, though. It would have taken, you know, because the match stopped anyway for the best part of a minute while Puy argued about it. But if she had just said, all right, I'll have a look on the video, and, you know, maybe like the challenge system, he can say, oh, can you video review that? It would have taken, you know, not long if she had a little iPad and the producer could have put that replay up. It was up on TV almost immediately. And all it would have taken was one replay. It was pretty obvious from that. Just kind of seems obvious at this point. The ATP are going to go full automatic line calling quite soon at all ATP events. I don't see why they wouldn't say, well, you know, at say Masters events or Grand Slams, obviously not in their remit, but I don't see why the top events wouldn't say, well, let's do video replay as well. So it seems like a no-brainer to me. The other big matches yesterday, Cam obviously threw at about the same time as Carlos Alcaraz, who beat Taro Daniel. I managed to balance myself and watch a bit of both. I actually watched the second set of Alcaraz, which is the one he lost on Chatrier. It was pretty windy on Chatrier all day. And I do think that, like, it wasn't windy in the grounds. I really do think that Chatrier just creates wind for whatever reason. But maybe that's just a conspiracy theory that bears no merit, but that's what I think. And, you know, it was so windy that all the clay basically ended up at one end of the court, all the dust, that is. And it was, you know, whipping up off the ground, creating these little swirls on the court. The ball was obviously moving in the air as well, quite unpredictably. And that kind of, you know, reduced the gap between Daniel and Alcaraz, which in the first set had been very big. And, you know, Taro Daniel played reasonably well in the second set. But then I think Alcaraz lost another three games after that. He hit 26 winners in two sets. It was pretty remorseless stuff. And, you know, it just proves that when he steps up a gear and finds his kind of rhythm, he really is an extremely good player. John McEnroe described him on Eurosport as truthfully a complete player. And he sort of wondered, you know, has anyone at that age ever been so complete? He said, well, you know, Pete could serve massive. Has anyone ever been serve as big as that when he first came on the scene? Probably not. But he didn't have much of a backhand. And he said something similar about Boris Becker. And it's true, really. Like, Alcaraz, his serving isn't perfect. McEnroe said he would give his backhand a B+, but, you know, B+ isn't bad. So, yeah, it's hard to find chinks in the armour. And, you know, at the moment it looks like, because Novak Djokovic won last night in straight sets against Martin Fucsovics, we're still on course for that Djokovic-Alcaraz semi-final on the second Friday. And and that is just going to be absolutely massive. And it will be fascinating to see how it pans out. Djokovic, as I say, he won last night in the night session. He wasn't entirely happy with life, I thought. The wind, he doesn't like the wind at the best of times. And the first set took an hour and 27 minutes, I think it was, in the end. And he won it in a tiebreak, but he was made to work very hard by Fuchsovic. I think also he just didn't play very well in that first set. And then he played a great tiebreak, because he always does. He's an absolute king of tiebreaks. And then, again, like Alcaraz, after that, he only lost another three games in the last two sets of the match. But, you know, he did spend best part of 3 hours on court, and Alcaraz didn't. I think he only 2 hours 15. So, yeah, it was pretty straightforward. I think the challenge for Djokovic is going to be, well, I don't know, I would usually say conserving energy is what he needs to do. But actually what he said last night I thought was very telling. So he was asked again about the Kosovo stuff, which he was obviously criticised by the French Minister of Sport as well as a lot of Kosovan politicians. And he said basically that he didn't need to say anything more, but he was asked by Matt Futterman of the New York Times whether a drama-free Grand Slam would be preferable. And he said, you know, drama-free Grand Slam with a grin, and I don't think it can happen for me. You know, I guess that drives me as well. And yeah, that kind of sums it up, really. He is someone who is motivated by, I think, by the drama, and he kind of relishes it. And, you know, he loves that us against them kind of thing, or me against the world, really. And Nole fam against the world, I suppose. And, you know, that's, I've always said it, it's such an effective motivational tactic for any sports person. So that's, I think that's what you saw, and it's the first time I've heard him really say it in such plain terms. Other great matches yesterday, Tanasi Kokkinakis beat Stan Wawrinka. That was obviously superb, and a fine match. Such a shame that the men's draw's oldest player didn't win back-to-back five setters, but he got pretty close, which is impressive for a guy who doesn't necessarily look like the fittest in the world. Grexpor and Hurkacz also went to five sets, including a 28-point tiebreak. That was pretty remarkable, but Hurkacz came through it eventually. Batista Agut was knocked out as well in five by Juan Pablo Varias, who came from two sets down, in fact, to beat Batista Agut. It's the same Varias who took Felix to five sets here last year, so clearly he's got a bit of stamina. And yeah, that's the biggest win of his career, I would suggest, to the world number 94 to reach the third round, so congrats to him. On the women's side, brilliant to see Elena Svitolina come through, just as Yelena Ostapenko couldn't. She was beaten, real surprise there, the American Peyton Stearns picking up a victory there. Ostapenko was typically bad-tempered in defeat, not at her opponent, at herself mostly, but it was, yeah, one of those things that slightly par for the course. Also watch out for Clara Torsen, by the way, who beat Leila Fernandez in a really good match. She's obviously come through qualifying, but she's a really talented player, and I think a real threat in the draw to anyone who comes across her, frankly. She's got lucky loser Alina Evanisian in the next round, and then the winner plays Makova or Bagu. So I think Torsen will think it's wide open for her. There was one quite charged moment off the court in the women's draw yesterday. Aryna Sabalenka, she was asked, I mean, she was asked a very, you know, firm question by the Ukrainian journalist who is here about signing a letter to support Lukashenko, quote, in times when he was torturing and beating up protesters in the street and then eventually showed up celebrating the new year with him. How is it possible that the potential world number one supports a dictator? And then Arena interrupted her and said, I have no comments to you, so thank you for your question. And she said, the second question is, you keep saying that nobody supports the war, nobody, but can you speak for yourself and say that I, Arena Sabalenka, flatly condemn the fact that Belarus is attacking Ukraine with missiles and I want it to stop? She said, I've got no comments. So basically, so you support everything because you cannot speak up. You're not a small person, Arena, you can. And then the moderator intervened And Arena basically then said, "You've got enough answers for me, and I've got no comments to you." And the journalist said, "It's all clear to us." Next question. It's pretty charged, and I kind of think, you know, I understand what the Ukrainian journalist in question is doing and why she feels she needs to do it. I think at this point, probably Sabalenka, like I said, what she said the other day, I think was pretty brave and pretty forthright. And at this point, she's probably said all she can say. Right, well, just moving on to Thursday, which is already actually underway here. I'm doing a feature today where I watch every point on Philip Chatrier and try to write down what I learn. Make of that what you will, to be honest. You can read it on the eye. iNews.co.uk, find me on Twitter, James Gray Sport, and that'll point you in the right direction, I'm sure. It means that I'm going to watch, Giulio Seppari, the Italian, versus Casper Ruud. I'm going to watch Iga Świątek, who's currently warming up in front of me. She's up against Claire Liu. Who else? Oh, Ons Jabeur against Ossian Donna, and then in the night match, I was hoping to watch Holger Rune against Gael Monfils, and then Gael Monfils pulled out of the tournament at 20 past 11 last night, which, desperately sad news. He's got what sounds like a really bad wrist injury that he basically played through to beat Sebastian Baez, and it means that they have instead put Alexander Zverev and Alex Molchan on the night match. They could have put Ossian Dodin and Ons Jabeur, a French player against a very popular global player, on, but elected not to, which, you know, they've still only had one night session here with a women's match in it. It's pretty weak, I think most people would agree. Not great. But that's all from me. I'll have Calvin tomorrow, hopefully, and we'll be able to talk all things Patton Cash, all things French Open, and maybe have a sneaky look ahead to the grass as well.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.